Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, September 21st, 2010, just one day before the equinox. I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Lavendar. Today, Lavendar will start at the beginning of her experience on planet Earth with her chapter called The Seedling, which lays the foundation for the journey that took her to Giant Rock and beyond. If you haven't heard last week's episode called Crack Between the Worlds, we hope you make the time to listen to it in the archives and then join us each week as the chronicle progresses. Before others were even channeling ET information, Lavendar was living the demonstrations of galactic operations even in childhood. After the story, we welcome your comments or questions, and please be mindful of others who will also be waiting with questions and comments. We'd like to thank Sierra for co-hosting in the chat room today. For those who can't call in with questions, she'll forward them to us. For those who can, the call-in number is 917-889-8292. That's 917-889-8292. And then press 1 if you have something to say. You can also listen on your computer at blogtalkradio.com/Starseed Radio Academy. Before I introduce Lavendar, I'd like to mention that if you register for free here at Blog Talk Radio and click the little red heart on our podcast player or the word follow, you'll get an email notice when our next show is coming in case we don't know you yet. All of our past shows are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/Starseed Radio Academy. If you're new to our show, you've missed a lot of chapters, but they're still available for you to catch up. If you haven't visited our main site yet, which is starseedhotline.com, we have a lot of fascinating and necessary information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge, like Lavendar's discovery of star markings, solar returns, your 10 hours of power, and the Teton reports. It's like a free internet classroom library for Starseed. We also have an archive of past teleconferences you can hear on our headline news page. Just click the banner on the main page and it takes you to the headline news page. Then once you're there, near the bottom of the page, you can also find the video slideshow where Lavendar tells the details about her discovery of star markings and the Pleiadian lineup, where she spent 2 days in the Great Pyramid with the Pleiadian ship overhead conducting a giant walk-in procedure. It's a spellbinding story, if you haven't heard it yet. You can see the pictures on our main site. Just go down the list of links on the left of any page and click Magical Moments Caught on Film. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. That's starseedhotline.ning.com. I'll be introducing Lavendar in just a moment, but first I'd also like to mention that she has written 2 books for Starseed, which are now available as e-books on our site. The first one, 50 Questions and Answers, is a transmission from the Antares Arcturus Midway Station, where she had the opportunity to ask 50 profound questions and be answered clearly and truthfully by Silovan, an ascended guardian of this galaxy. The second e-book, Quartz Crystals, A Celestial Point of View, is a comprehensive guide for the starseed use of crystals, including solar star dates for the next 10 years for charging crystals with galactic frequency. These books are a must-read for starseed to understand the galactic big picture and your part in it. If you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. That's 888-881-0881. If you'd like to learn about the new device that disables unsupportive implants, relieves pain, and resets your energy, call our toll-free number or email lavendar@starseedhotline.com. That's lavendar@starseedhotline.com. And now it's time to introduce Lavendar before she starts her story. Hello, Lavendar.
Well, hello, and I want to thank everyone for all their comments and their phone calls and their emails. You know, it was really a big moment for me to release Crack Between the Worlds on Tuesday and on Saturday. And, of course, we had two different audiences, which was, you know, great because the people that, you know, could not be here on Tuesday could be on Saturday on the weekends. So I just want to thank all of you for your comments, especially to my personal friends that came on and supported me and who have supported me all these years. So I just wanted to, you know, comment on that. And so when I got to thinking about what I needed to bring out of the vault next, I thought, after seeing some of the comments and emails, several people said, you know, you need to do an autobiography and, you know, what was your childhood like and who are you? And, you know, so I thought, well, you know, maybe I should just pull that chapter out called The Seedling, something that I had written already. So that's what we decided to do today. And so I pre-recorded it. And so now you'll be able to hear it next.
Okay, before I start that, do you want to say anything about the equinox and relevance to starseed?
Well, yes. So, you know, four times a year we have different activations that are planetarily coded to starseed, well, actually to the whole planet, all living things on the planet. But these four times, they set the different clocks for evolution and movement. And the fall equinox really is a time when it signals to all the fauna and flora to go to sleep and to go to another direction of creation and get ready for winter. You know, that's one vibration. But the other vibration, it gives us starseed on the planet a time to regroup and a plan for the, you know, the coming year and all the different things that we've been given in these different assignments at the Tetons and, you know, the August Harmonic Convergence and Pleiadian lineup and all of them. You know, there is a time where it's a settling and a time of regrouping. So after the gong of the 23rd, there's just it's like a shifting gears in a car. You know, when I was on the farm driving tractor, we had gear shifts, and you know, just had to, you know, go and find that gear to go slow or go faster, you know, and crawl in crawling speed with the tractors, of course. And it just comes to mind that that's kind of what happens. It's a gear change, you know, within all of us, and it's a time of. You know, of course, we've had this great Jupiter-Uranus conjunct. Of course, Mars and Venus are conjunct in the sky and have been, and they keep traveling together, which really brings a lot of people with their sexual energies together, a lot of male-female times that are happening within each person. You know, it's where you gather that other side of you. If you're men, your feminine comes out. If you're women, your masculine comes out. But there's a balancing procedure that's happening now. And with Jupiter-Uranus, it's just shining really bright on the whole planet, and it's giving us a feeling of optimism. You know, this is an uptime. This is lifting up the spirits of the people on the planet, regardless of the news, regardless of political rhetoric, regardless of spiritual upheaval through religious, you know, battles. There's something else taking place on the planet. You know, and maybe it's a good thing the news doesn't have this. Maybe it's a good thing that this is not being broadcast, you know, as loudly as their other, you know, drums of war. Because what we're doing is a very, very silent but very effective movement on the planet. And one day when we take a stand, really take a stand, you know, having to do with, you know, all the issues that other people are having to deal with right now. When we do make our statement, and we'll be flying like a V, we'll be flying like the geese, and we'll be taking turns, you know, holding the point of this action. And the eagles will be coming out, and they will be learning to fly like geese, no longer like eagles, because, you know, eagles stand alone. They have a way of saying, you know, I want to do it by myself. But I have a lot of broken-winged eagle friends and clients that have come back to me saying, you know, I can't really do this by myself. Therefore, I just really need some help, and can I find other people like me? And I've been collecting. You can't imagine the collection of people that I have now over all these years, especially the eagles. And they're just waiting. They're waiting for the right moment to show themselves again. They've been hurt. They've been smashed, you know. And for those of you that are listening to this, if you had those experiences, I understand it. Totally. So with the equinox, yeah, I would say, you know, that this is a time of, you know, reevaluating who you are. And I have a really good friend, Donna, in Hawaii, who, you know, this is her birthday, and so she's listening. I hope that she knows that I love and care about her, and she was with us on the Yucatan trip, and spent a lot of time with me in Aruba, and so I just want to honor her for the equinox, okay?
Okay. That being said, we now bring you the chapter called The Seedling.
Crack Between the Worlds, Chapter 1. This one's called The Seedling. I have spent several years making the decision to write Crack Between the Worlds. The wrestling matches I've had with myself over publishing this material almost put me on tilt. So the original intent of the writing of this book was to chronicle my adventures with a famous actress. After all, she was one of the people that were on the front lines of metaphysical knowledge. What better way to inform the metaphysical students to keep a journal of our high strangeness adventures? And we had a lot of them. I was also aware that certain sections of this material should be put in the vault, as the world was not ready to hear this version of extraterrestrial behavior. The information that I would like to disclose now deals with more than amazing journeys we had in search of extraterrestrial contact. The information would deal with mind control, metaphysical deception, betrayal, abuses of power and energy, extraterrestrial technology, their interference, their experiments, and their lies and deceit. The vanishing twins and extraterrestrial agendas. Some of the material presented in this book I have held in confidence for over 30 years, waiting for the right time to release it. And I think that time is now. For me to present this information properly, you must know who I am, where I came from, and how I got to the point in my life where I learned this information. The first two chapters of this book are dedicated to my life and my metaphysical training. To borrow the title from a popular movie, I'm going to take you back to the future starting with 1950s as a young person and traveling through the mid-80s as an adult, where I was being prepared and trained to receive the information that I'm about to reveal to you. When you're a kid growing up, you never know what really lies ahead of you. You know, you just plug along in life with no worries, no agendas, no judgment. You just do the things that kids do, like take piano lessons, play with friends, go to school, do chores around the house. Well, I grew up on a farm in Oklahoma, so in my case, you know, part of my chores was picking cotton and driving a tractor at the age of 10. But more about that later. I never thought at the age of 10 that I'd ever take the path in life that I have taken or seen or done the things that I have, although my destiny was determined at my birth. I should have had my first clue about my adult life from the events of my conception and birth, but at the age of 10, I had more on my mind than to track my destiny. My parents were married for 7 years but had not a child. They asked for a baby, but nothing had come about yet. They came to find out that my father was sterile. These verified tests of his sterility pretty much ended their hopes for a child. So when my mother became pregnant with me, it was a very shocking surprise to my parents. Years later, when I was an adult, I asked my mother about my conception, and she revealed to me that it was around the equinox in March of 42 when her pregnancy occurred. She recalled that she and my dad were sleeping the night with friends. They were making love when a light that appeared in the room hovered over them where they laid. My mother recalled the night of my conception because it was such an unusual experience. She said there was a very high degree of ecstasy and extraordinary lovemaking under the mysterious light. She knew at that time that something very special had happened, and she knew she was going to conceive and have a child. After all, my mother was a genie. Tracking my conception now as an adult and what I know now about extraterrestrial interference or intervention, whichever way you want to call it, the conception was planned. They took galactic seed, gave it to my mother to hold in her womb space. My father was just the delivery system and a protective system. Suspecting that she was pregnant, she took a urine sample in a jar to the doctor, and for some reason, there was this little black spider in the jar. When mother found out she was pregnant, the doctor came out and said, "You're gonna have a little spider." So, one might say, along came a spider. As a result of the doctor's humor, I was nicknamed Spider. The nickname Spider stuck with me most of my childhood, and every trip to the doctor after that was the same. "Oh, you brought the little spider," he'd say. This was repeated when he took out my tonsils, set my broken arm twice, and took out my appendix. All of this before the age of 5. The day of my birth, it snowed. My dad was off buying a horse saddle. My mother kept saying, "Oh, I can't deliver this baby until my husband gets here." So she held off having me until Daddy came. They took her into the room, and when I was born, the doctor turned me upside down and started spanking me. My father said, "Don't spank her too hard. You're spanking the next woman president of the United States." And everyone laughed in the room. He said, "I'm very serious," and they all stopped laughing. As a small child, I became very aware of things. I was born with full awareness. I could hear, see, understand. I knew English. I knew what people were saying, and I thought, "Oh, how quaint. Here I am, this little bitty bud in this body, and I can understand everything that everybody's saying." So they immediately washed me and gave me to my mother, where I breastfed, and then I was taken to the nursery. They laid me down with some crying kids, and they left me in there for a very long time, and those kids were crying, and I'm thinking, "Oh my God, that really affected me later on." And I realized that it did, because the first few hours that you're here, the sound and vibration of what you hear really stays with you. I also realized that in the nursery there was a window where I could see all the snow coming down, and I have memory of seeing this great big praying mantis looking creature. I wasn't afraid of it, but I looked at it and thought, "Wow, I'm going to have to remember that." In fact, what I would do in my little bitty consciousness state is make mental recordings, because I had to remember this. As soon as I could talk and form words, one of the first things I said was, "I want to tell you about being born." My mother thought that it was just remarkable, and my dad told me not to ever tell anybody else. I didn't understand why I couldn't tell anybody, but he made sure that I never spoke to anyone about that. And that was the kind of pattern all my life. When anything strange ever happened, well, let's just don't talk about it. Years later, when I was researching, I found that people who had already ascended with full consciousness and awareness and who had chosen to come and be in physical body could and would be able to remember their birth and subsequent timings. I felt a lot better about where I'd come from because I realized that I'd really earned the right to remember my birth. And only people who had mastered life and death can come in and have full consciousness at birth. I didn't know that then, but I found it out through metaphysical training. It gave me a little more strength in knowing about who I was. My birth, the past, well, the many past life recalls, and the extraterrestrial intervention was the engine that would run the train of my adulthood. But as a child, I had no concept of extraterrestrials or abductions or anything connected with you know, anything of that nature. I would, as it turned out, address these subjects head on as an adult. But, you know, I needed my childhood. Although I was born in 1942, most of my memories in childhood took place in the 50s. It was a time of UFO sightings. The term flying saucer had entered our vocabulary. There were the UFO movies of the 50s, such as It Came from Outer Space, The Day the Earth Stood Still, The Thing from Outer Space, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, The Thing from Another World, War of the Worlds, Them, and Forbidden Planet. Little did I know at the time that UFOs and extraterrestrials would be a big part of my life. The 50s were the era of new television broadcasting. Television became the dominant mass media and source for news as people brought TV into their homes. In the early 50s, young people watched TV more hours than they went to school. Ideal families, ideal schools, neighborhoods, the world were all seen in a way which had only partial basis in reality. Every American family wanted to be the Cleavers, like Father Knows Best, or the Nelsons, of the Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. The effect on newspaper media and attendance at movies declined with a greater relevance on TV sources for information. There were sitcoms like The Honeymooners, Lassie, I Love Lucy, that grabbed the imagination of the American people, and these shows featured popular characters who thousands of viewers watched each week and copied in their everyday life. Families enjoyed variety shows like The Wonderful World of Disney and The Ed Sullivan Show on Sunday evenings. People began to accept what was heard and seen on television because they were eyewitnesses to events as never before, because television was live. Programs such as You Are There brought historical events into the living rooms of many Americans. Daytime programs like The Guiding Light, soap operas were popular and helped advertisers sell many products to the home makers of America. 50s, well, they were conservative in clothing, that's for sure. Men wore flannel suits and women wore dresses with pinched-in waist and high heels. Families worked together, played together, vacationed together, and gender roles were strongly held. Girls played with Barbie dolls and Dale Evans gear, and boys with Roy Rogers and Davy Crockett paraphernalia. Drive-in movies became popular for families and teens. Cars were seen as an indicator of prosperity and coolness. Every teen had to have one. The fashion successes were Bill Blass and his blue jeans, poodle skirts made out of felt and decorated with sequins and poodle appliques, ponytails for girls and flat tops and crew cuts for guys. Saddle shoes, blue suede loafers were popular. Teenagers were defined as a separate generation and were represented by James Dean, who wore blue jeans and Rebel Without a Cause and created a fashion and attitude sensation. Activities that we liked were like flying saucer watching and watching and dancing to Dick Clark's American Bandstand. Fad hits with kids were toys like hula hoops and Hopalong Cassidy guns and Western gear and Davy Crockett coonskin hats and silly putty. The feel-good innocence of a lot of the 50s music reflected the optimism in America. We teenagers were looking for something more exciting. They discovered a type of music called rock and roll, and this music was developed from a blend of southern blues and gospel music with an added strong backbeat. This music was popular with us teenagers because it broke out of the mainstream of conservative American middle-class mold. The greats were Bill Haley, Elvis Presley, and Jerry Lee Lewis were promoted on radio by just as popular disc jockeys like Alan Freed and the Big Bopper, who himself was a good artist. Who would ever forget Chantilly Lace? The deaths of Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper are still lamented by friends today. Music in the 50s was more than just rock and roll, though. Crooners like Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, Perry Como, and Dinah Shore were all popular. Many of these singers were the idols of the rockers who developed the new sounds. Many of their songs are still remembered by my generation. The 50s was the time of the Cold War and the threat of atomic attack. An animated turtle named Bert taught us how to duck and cover in case of atomic attack. This was comic, yet it was terrifying. Bert's lessons reflected an abiding national concern with civil defense and the threat of nuclear attack that spread nationwide the tensions of the Cold War. The greatest fear during the Cold War was the risk it would escalate into a full nuclear exchange with hundreds of millions killed. But, you know, we were just kids, and we really never gave the Cold War that much thought. As I mentioned at the first of the chapter, you know, we lived on a farm in Oklahoma, and I was born with red hair, and my eyes were very big and wide, and from pictures taken, people would say, "It looks like this kid's been electrocuted. Why are her eyes so big?" But it was just the state that I was in most of the time. Later on, my friend Donna would say, "Oh, please don't show me or anybody else those baby pictures. Not one more time. They really scare me." My hair started turning dark about the age of 2. I was with my mother all the time, and I mean all the time, because Daddy was farming. My first memory of being in a garden was in the asparagus patch, crawling down through my little asparagus wonderland. We had dogs and cats and chickens, and one of my favorite pets was a chicken named Chicken Little. I played with him continuously until one day I accidentally rolled over on him while we were playing. You know, Chicken Little lived, but wasn't really right after that. He began chasing and terrifying me, so we had fried chicken made out of him. As I grew older, I became aware of memory and how important it was to me. I can remember many, many things, such as how many beans were in a jar, or how many people were in a theater on a given day and time. This mind and memory exercise was the first of my training. Little things that didn't mean anything to anyone else were invaluable and important to me. I didn't know then how crucial this training would be years later when I started tracking the way I do. At the age of 5, I started developing my psychic ability. I began seeing things, such people like who passed on, people that were dead, and then I'd see future events that would happen. My grandfather's birthday was April 16th, which is 26 degrees of Aries. So I had the psychic bloodline and my granddad's bloodline. Also, my granddad was... My granddad's great-great-great-grandfather was a signer from South Carolina who signed the Declaration of Independence, which is another part of my granddad's blood lineage. So I was aware that I was a daughter of the American Revolution, but never joined, although my mother did. Later on, when I started thinking about genetics and my granddad's psychic bloodline, I realized that I came into the world with a new frontier galactic spirit, because 26 degrees Aries is the mark of galactic spirit, and I had the new frontier in my bloodline. Now, my Earth daddy's family, they were mostly Danish, and since my father was sterile, my father's mother, my material grandmother, never allowed my picture to be displayed with other grandchildren. It always perplexed me why I didn't put my picture with the others, but years later, I realized her justification. She thought that my mother had been unfaithful to her son and had gone wayward with the traveling salesman. It was that old traveling salesman in the woodpile syndrome. I never resonated with that side of the family. I wasn't anything like them. I guess it was the galactic traveling salesman that kept me alienated from them. I'd always resonated with my mother and my grandmother, my mother's mother. My grandmother and I had the same birthday, born with Sagittarius Sun at 12 degrees. December 5th, 1889 was her birthday, and December 5, 1942 was mine. She really loved and adored me. I have a memory of my grandmother touching my mother's stomach while I was inside my mother's womb and performing some kind of incantation. When I asked her about it later, she confirmed to me that she had indeed placed a blessing on me. I was an only child living on a farm, so I had no playmates except my mother and Chicken Little. My father was always busy undertaking chores or off fishing somewhere. He wasn't around like my mother was. When I was 6 years old, we moved back to a larger town, which is like 14 miles east of us, and that's where I would go to school. I was not very popular with any of the kids, and I didn't immediately make friends. I think I scared them on some level, and somehow they knew I was different. This was especially true when I'd say and do things that weren't normal for kids to say. It was an unfortunate fact that kids can be cruel. I had some cruel things done to me when I was younger, but I think that the cruelest thing they ever did to me was make sure I got some really nasty, and I mean nasty, cards on Valentine's Day. When we all put our little boxes out, mine was filled with really ugly Valentines. Every Valentine's Day for 5 years, it was, "Let's get her." And it wasn't just some of my classmates. It was all of them, joining in on the fun at my expense. To this very day, I have trouble with Valentine's Day. It's not something that I look forward to. After the sixth grade, my grandparents moved to California, and we moved back to the farm. Now, this is a really, really small school. There were 10 people in my class, 9 boys and me. Here came another difficult 5 years. The only female support I had came from girls either older or younger than me. But in class, I was surrounded by the boys, most of who really had a crush on me. Because of the guys, I had to become somewhat tomboyish just to hold my own up. But this was good. This was good for me. My encounter with public education had toughened me up and had made me a stronger person. I needed the toughness because I was really born a very delicate person. Being delicate was a hindrance in my early life. I was like a little hummingbird. This probably explained the ugly Valentines. The doctor could not understand how I lived the first 5 years because I would hardly eat or drink anything. I was taken to him repeatedly because my mother couldn't coach me to eat. This little spider just didn't want to eat. Somehow I was surviving on some other kind of system. For 5 years, 2 or 3 bites a day were all my mother could get me to eat. I learned later that I was on a different nutritional system. I had mastered in another life what some call a breatharian diet. Plus, I was receiving some kind of galactic colostrum, and that is how I was growing on nearly no nourishment. My physical or earth nutrition consisted of drinking milk directly from the cows, and that's mostly what I grew up on. I didn't eat vegetables or meat. I never ate anything green until my wanderings in the asparagus garden. After that, I ate something green. My parents went through quite an ordeal with me over food and water. When I was 10, my daddy got into politics, and one night he brought the governor home for dinner. I remembered where he sat at the table. My dad sat on one side of him, and he said to me, "Young gal, just come and sit next to me." So I sat next to him on the other side. As we ate dinner, the adults were involved in big grown-up conversations, and all of a sudden, like the shot heard around the world, I said out of the blue, "Are you going to divorce your wife and marry your secretary?" There was a shocked look on the governor's face. Today, when I think about this event, I remember the look on his face, and it was priceless. Now, my father wasn't pleased with this psychic happening. He started jumping through hoops with apologetic tone of voice. He said, "Oh, I must apologize for her. She speaks out of turn all the time. You just never know what's going to come out of her mouth." My dad was so mad and so upset at what I had done that he could hardly finish his meal. You know, years later, you know, they would marry. So at the end of the year of 53, daughter 1, dad 0. These were the kind of things I'd get myself into. Why? Because I had 3 planets in Sag, and if it's the truth, then it's the truth. What happens then is that my mouth just opens and things just start pouring out. And if it's the truth, it flew out, and there is a Sagittarian saying, if it hits thy brain, it hits thy mouth. Also at 10 years old, I started my period, and I began developing breasts. At 12, I kissed my first boy, a senior in high school. At 14, my lifelong sweetheart started dating my best friend, and the learning betrayal firsthand really hurt. By 15, I had the body of a 25-year-old woman, and it really scared my parents to death, especially my dad. In pictures of me at 16, well, I looked like a young Elizabeth Taylor. I didn't know what that meant at the time and didn't think of myself as pretty. Actually, I just had many bouts of depression, not knowing then what depression was. I was just melancholy. My mother was very young in spirit, with black hair and a cute figure. Since I didn't have my driver's license yet, she'd take me to town to pick up my girlfriends, and we'd go drive around the town, the square, honking the car horn at the boys. She became one of us. I spent some really good years with her that way. She was my best friend, and I could tell her anything from girl stuff to boys. She was very hip, and she didn't go for smoking cigarettes, but she would let us have a beer now and then. When I started dating, a strange thing would happen between me and the boys that I dated. Anytime I felt myself getting close enough to consider marriage and children, this voice would come out of my mouth. I would turn to them and channel all this material explaining why I could never have earth children. That would end a relationship in a New York heartbeat, especially in the 50s and 60s. This continued to happen to me with every one of my relationships. It was like a recording that would get turned on and off the minute a guy would cross the line leading to sex, marriage, or children. It was like it was rehearsed over and over and over again. It was the same speech, word for word, every time. It was a recording. It wasn't tailor-made for any one individual. You know, everyone was equal. They got the same speech. I didn't know it then, but I found out later that I had two pineals. I lived in one pineal, and the other was for visitors. In other words, an extraterrestrial came, dropped in to the second pineal, they do their thing, and I'm just a spectator watching the first pineal. This is where the recordings originated. Turn it on, turn it off, watch boy, go away. I can laugh now. I just hope none of them ever got together and compared notes. Well, who would have believed it anyway? Who says, I could never have any earth children? But that was just a clue. What other kind of children are there? And then, of course, years later, at Giant Rock, when, you know, I was told, you belong to no man, you belong to us. And, of course, that really cued me in for later. You know, after that, I started dating an older man who was a state senator. Because I looked older than I really was, he thought I was 25, but in fact I was 18 years old. Thinking that I was older than I was, on February 13, 1963, he asked me to marry him. I told him I couldn't marry him because I didn't love him. He showed me the very next day, on Valentine's Day, he married a girl named Donna. Another little Valentine present. Later, he ran for governor of the state of Oklahoma, but he was not elected. But he was elected to the U.S. Congress. You know, I always had a fondness for him, and he, of course, died last year. My daddy wanted me to marry him, but I didn't love him. I liked him a lot, but it just didn't have that spark. On top of that, out of my mouth came the famous, I can't have any earth children speech. Every time I'd give this speech, my eyes would glaze over, and whammo, here came the being unable to marry and have any earth children and being destined for other things. You know, I was 21 years old, still a virgin, and I still hadn't had that great sexual experience. I was dating a guy named Wallace, who I was really crazy about. I decided that he was going to be the one to pluck the flower of my virtue. I went to Austin, Texas for Labor Day week to be with him. I got what I went for, but it wasn't what I expected. There were no bells, no whistles associated with this act of love. In fact, it was disappointing. Wallace never believed me when I told him I was a virgin. Flying back to Oklahoma City from Austin, the plane landed in Dallas for a layover. One of the stewardesses on the plane blurted out my name. She said there was an emergency. Well, it was my girlfriend, my ex-roommate, and who got me off the plane for the emergency. It seemed she was suicidal, pregnant, and planning to kill herself. She didn't want to die by herself. She wanted me with her in the car so I could die with her. I mention this because I actually experienced a divine hand in this attempted suicide. We were driving back to Oklahoma City from Dallas. We were driving through the Arbuckle Mountains, halfway between Dallas and Oklahoma City, on a really curvy, narrow road, an old U.S. Highway 77, which is now I-35. As we started around a curve, she started saying that she didn't want to live anymore. I started to sense that there was something major about to happen, that we were about to drive off a cliff. Just as I started to reach for the wheel, another hand reached for the wheel and turned us right into the mountain instead of over at the side. I wasn't hurt, but the car was bumping and banging into the mountain. I felt like I was just floating in the air, not being impacted. I didn't know how that happened, at least at that point in my life. When the ambulance and police came, she had lost the baby. I never did tell them she tried to kill us. Needless to say that after that ride, our relationship ended. I mention this story only because I remembered that some divine hand intervened and saved my hide. Later on in life, I found out that this divine hand was actually ET intervention. That was the second ET occurrence in my life, and I was still asleep and unaware of what was happening. It was that religious program thinking that kept me from seeing the truth about anything. I worked for the Oklahoma State Employment Service from 62 to 68 as a receptionist and then as a Job Corps recruiter. I understood about people being out of work and always tried to cheer everybody up. And during this time, I met Terry. He taught me everything I ever wanted to know about sex, so I thought I should marry him. Where was the "I can't marry you" speech? I could never have earth children speech when you really needed it. Since their lightning strikes, which I will discuss later on in the book, I really don't remember much about this man. I was told about him, but the 2 years I was married to him are a struggle to remember, even when I look at the wedding pictures. I divorced him because I found lipstick on his shorts, and I threw a fit. This was not a smart move on my part, especially when you're naked and throwing a fit. Terry beat me up pretty good, and I ran out of the apartment naked and screaming bloody murder. People came, put a sheet on me, and took me to the hospital. At the hospital, I called David Hall, who was running for governor at the time. He was a friend of my dad, so he came to the hospital to see me, and when he saw me, he said, "Oh my God, who did this?" And I said, "Terry." About that time, Terry walked in the room. David grabbed him and threw him against the wall. I said, "David, you're running for governor. You've got too many witnesses. Please don't do this." He said, "You're right." So he called the police and they carted him off. David said, "I'm going to call your dad." I said, "If you tell him, he'll come here and kill Terry and then he'll go to jail. You must promise me never to tell my dad." He promised. I divorced Terry in January of 68, and afterwards I flew to Bermuda, where I started recuperating while paying off his car and his law school. He worked for a judge, so I got stuck paying him alimony, which was a terrible thing, but I did it. I paid it off. Many years later, after Terry was killed in a car accident in 1979, I told my dad about the beating. I knew that he couldn't go kill Terry because Terry was dead now. Before Terry died, I think he robbed a bank and left the country. I believe this because he owed my dad $5,000. And exactly $5,000 in a brown paper bag arrived from Mexico in the mail to my dad just out of the blue. In November of 68, David Hall became governor of the state of Oklahoma, and on the front page of the Daily Oklahoman, he was shaking people's hands, and just as they snapped the picture, he was shaking mine. I was in my purple dress, and I have that picture to this day. I also have the purple dress. In 1968, I left the Oklahoma Employment Service in Oklahoma City and went to work at FM Radio in Tulsa as sales manager for the radio station. On February 12, 1969, I had an experience at a radio station that, because of events that happened that day, started me on my huge metaphysical journey. I lived on the 28th floor in the same building as KAMFM Radio. I would crawl out of bed every morning, go up to the station, check my messages, and then back down to my apartment to finish getting dressed. As the sales manager, I had lots of perks. I had a car, an apartment, an expense account. I was 26 years old, good looking, a perfect size 10, and I had the world by the tail. Part of my job as sales manager was to call on clients and help write copy for our radio ads. I spearheaded a campaign called 2 for 2 for 20 Pass It On. I won a lot of awards for that campaign, especially for the slogan, Have a Nice Day, Pass It On, which was mine. Now back to February 12, 69. There was this man named Jim who would never return in my phone calls. He would make appointments with me and never show up. I thought this was very strange that he would stand me up all the time. He worked for the RCA Whirlpool dealership in Tulsa, and he had a very large advertising budget, which I needed a part of for the radio station. He spent at least 2 months avoiding me. There was this place in Tulsa called the Cognito Inn. This is where the rich oil men, bankers, and investors would take their girlfriends and secretaries for a quiet getaway. The main rule of this place was that wives were not permitted in this club until after 7 at night. The Cognito Inn was quaint, dark, and was partially lit by candlelight. They had these little rooms at the side where the men could take their girls and make out. It was really a wild place. All the advertising people went there. If you were in radio or TV, you took your clients there. It was the entertainment spot of Tulsa. My daily routine consisted of going into the station in the morning, making a few phone calls. I'd leave the station, make personal visits on a few clients, and by lunchtime I'd be at the Cognito Inn with a client, eating and drinking until 2 p.m., and then it was back to the station. I would work there till 4 p.m., and then back to the Cognito Inn, where I'd stay until midnight. This was how we conducted business in those days, advertising done in a bar. On February 12, 1969, Jim came in the Cognito Inn. I didn't know what he looked like, but I heard someone say his name. I turned and looked. And I said, where is the son of a bitch? He's been standing me up for 2 months. When I finally located him, I went over and introduced myself. And he said, I know who you are. I've been in love with you from the moment I heard your name. I said, what? He said, that's it. You're my soulmate, and I know it. And I've been avoiding you, and I don't know what to do. And I said, oh, you've got a really good line there. That's really good. That's one of the best things I've ever heard. He said, do you believe in reincarnation? And I said, well, yeah, kind of. He said, well, I've been having dreams about you. I've been seeing you. You haven't been seeing me, but I've been seeing you. I've been watching you for a long time. He was drinking Black Russians, and then another, and then another. And by this time, he had not changed his story. He just kept getting deeper and deeper into metaphysics. Even though I was having a few drinks, I began to think that there might be something to this metaphysical stuff. When the night was over, I got in my little car to drive home. As I started the car, I looked up at the windshield, and written in condensation in human handwriting were the words, you'll have this man for 3 years and no more, February 12, 1972. When I saw it, it freaked me out. I thought, well, who would do this? But then there was the fact that my car was locked, and the message was written from the inside. This really freaked me out. In fact, it freaked me out so bad that I just wanted to leave town, leave Tulsa altogether. I went to my boss and said, you know, you've been waiting for me to go to Vegas. I'm going tomorrow. The next day, I got on an airplane and left for Vegas. This was the third extraterrestrial occurrence in my life. But this time, I was more awake.
Wow. Lavendar. So this is the chapter called The Seedling. Now, so far you've had three extraterrestrial interventions in your life. Are you there, Lavendar? There you are. Hello?
Am I here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, little phone trouble there.
Okay, what was the question?
Well, I'm just saying that now at this point in the story, you've had three extraterrestrial interventions in your life, and you're starting to wake up.
Yeah. The handwriting on the windshield was probably, you know, something. That whole thing was just, I just didn't know. I was very, I knew that someone somewhere was doing something with me. I didn't exactly know what at that time.
And that was actually one of the turning points.
Yeah, it was a big, very, very big turning point.
And then you left the very next day for Las Vegas.
Right, and when I come back on the show again, I'll pick up where that left off.
Okay. Well, we already have some people with questions.
Okay, I'm ready.
So you want to get right to that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. We have a caller. Looks like you're calling from Skype. Do you have a comment or question for Lavendar? You're on the air.
Hey, this is Deborah. I actually have questions for the crack between the worlds, if you guys don't mind.
Okay, we can just barely hear you, so if you could speak up, that would help.
This is Deborah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's a little difficult, but I can hear you.
Well, I have a question for the crack between the worlds, if you guys don't mind.
Okay.
Well, when you guys were talking about the Wadi Scrolls when I was younger, I remembered hearing a story about Wadi Scrolls and that scrolls were found in North America. But if you guys said that there was no information released, I don't know how I could have gotten that information before.
Well, first of all, the Wadi Scrolls were found in the Qumran caves over in Israel. So I don't know what Wadi Scrolls that you were referring to in North America. I don't know.
Okay, maybe it wasn't North America. I know that I heard Wadi Scrolls before. But I was wondering about the horse you guys were talking about last show. And you said that I could tell that it was a galactic horse. I don't know how you can tell if an animal is actually special like that or not, because, well, some animals actually have been reacting to me, like looking at me specifically. So it's weird because I don't know how they could see me as a special entity, or if I can't see them as a special entity.
Could you hear the question?
I heard the question. There are horses on the planet that have extra technology placed in their bodies so they can hold a higher consciousness. And there's a certain look that happens out of their eyes where I'm able to discern who they are. I'm not sure I can ever teach anyone how to do that. It's just something that I'm very aware of and I've been a part of for some time. It's just, and there's others that I know that have the same ability to spot these galactic animals. It's just it's kind of a built-in resonance that happens.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
And my last question is, when did you start the Starseed Markings version 2, I guess? When did that happen?
You mean Discovery of Star Markings Part 2?
Yes.
It started happening a couple of months ago when I started seeing these markings and these charts from these clients. And I started seeing combinations of of different aspects that started opening up the files in my head, talking to different people, and they had to do with, you know, different experiments on the planet. And the, you know, the France information, the Mary Magdalene information, the bloodlines of Jesus, you know, Athena and the 96 goddesses, all that started kind of coming. And I noticed, you know, when I did your chart, Deborah, that, you know, you had some of these markings, and that I also was really aware of what I was doing the day you were born. So I kind of, you know, knew that somehow, some way, you were part of something that we were tracking.
Hmm. Oh, I just really, I guess I'm worrying too much of how it seems like I'm a normal person, but yet I learn differently, but I'm supposed to be this really important person. So, anyways, is there anything you want to ask me, maybe?
Well, you know, starseed and people that are born to coming in with another group's soul activation. Like, there's a lot of souls that have come in together so that they can do work together. And part of what we're trying to do with our show and with some of the clients that we're, you know, seeing is trying to make sense of some of their experiences and put a pattern to them, a tapestry that comes together with these starseed markings, so that you can, you know, maybe find each other, or, you know, have the time to come on the radio show and talk about your experiences. And there's a collective, you know, global thought happening now at this level. So I don't want you to be worried. This isn't a time to worry. This is a time of really acceleration, celebration of, you know, owning who you are and finding out. You know, you're very young, and you're on the track of learning who you are more and more every day. So just remember, you know, what we talked about with your natural state, your rites of passage, and don't worry. There's no, you know, worry isn't. Maybe you're just anxious to find out more. Is that what I'm really picking
yes.
up to you?
Yes, and also, I don't know, it feels like I could benefit a lot from being more psychic, and it's just not there for me.
Yeah, but maybe it hasn't been the time for a lot of things to be revealed to you. You know, just take one step at a time, one day at a time, and just notice, you know, the different doors that open up for you to open up your abilities to, you know, go into knowing. I think knowing is probably a lot better off for you than being psychic. You know, when you're psychic, sometimes you get to see things that you don't want to see, and it will trouble you. So, you know, go for knowing. Just go for knowledge and see how it fits in your life on a daily basis.
All right.
Can I interject something here? Can I interject something here? I just saw this image. You know the cars that they use for teaching people to drive, and they actually have two steering wheels, two sets of brakes, two sets, you know, accelerator. You're driving the car, and you have to know that there is a being who has been assigned to sit in that other seat. And you're the driver, and you make your choices. And if you were to make a really wrong turn or about to be hit, then the other driver will take over and keep you safe and guide you back to the right path, and then it's your turn to drive again. So just try to observe as much as you can and trust the fact that someone like you is not here alone. Certainly there are other people in human bodies who came with you, and then there's the unseen one who's sitting in that side seat riding shotgun, watching your back, and they won't let you get too far off the path. So just take comfort in that and keep your eyes open and watch the signs along the side of the road, and you will make the right choices. And in that way, your own intuition is the beginning of psychic awareness, but you have to relax with it.
All right. Yeah, like for some odd reason, I'm trying to be psychic or like writing the question and then waiting to see if I actually answer it with my own hand without knowing. I'm really tense and I feel like there's something going to happen, but I don't know if I'm actually ready for it kind of feeling.
Well, you see, what I feel like you've got your foot on the gas and you want to go faster and faster because you're in a hurry to get to someplace else. And if you hurry up too much, you're going to miss the scenery and the signs and the guidance that's there on the side of the road. So you have to govern your speed so that you don't miss important pieces of the puzzle along the way. So just be patient. I mean, part of you already knows everything, and the other part is trying to catch up to that. So try to find a comfortable pace, and everything will be okay.
All right. Thank you, Ariel and Lavendar.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Deb, it's always good to hear from you, and we're going to say goodbye now and move on to our next caller. Thanks for calling in. Okay. From the 619 area, 619-534, you're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for Lavendar?
Hi, Lavendar, this is Serenity. I just wanted to say how grateful I am for the reading that I had a couple months ago, and that, everything that you're saying is just so dead on about the knowing, and we don't have to be in the driver's seat and living in the now, and the downloads we are getting are real, and that we have to believe ourselves before any psychic ability or great, amazing, life-altering transition happens.
That's good. Yeah, you're very right on. Thank you.
Well said.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. We will move on now to area 303-668. You're on the air. You have a question or comment for Lavendar? Hello, 303, you're on the air. Are you muted? Area 303-668. Well, we can't hear you if you are talking. So either check your mute button or we'll try again later. We're going to have to move on. I want to remind everybody that if you do have something you want to say, you have to press 1. And that way we will know that you're not just simply listening. Okay, well, we have another caller from Canada, area 403. You're on the air. Do you have a question or comment?
Hi, it's Astrea calling in. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I wasn't able, I was in the middle of making dinner, and I wasn't able to listen to the show tonight, but I did catch a little bit of the last caller's comments, and I wanted to share with everybody that intuition and guidance, and I'm sure from Lavendar, your experiences as the carrier of all this information and the keeper of all this galactic knowledge and code, your intuition sometimes blasted you in the face with it. Sometimes it's just that still, really, really quiet inner voice speaking as a walk-in and as part of the Pleiadian family. And as an indigo, I am a hybrid of many, many energies. I just want to share that when you start allowing yourself to be worthy of that guidance, because we're so conditioned to not be worthy of it, we're so trained to not be allowed to have that sort of guidance that's not in the physical 3D world with our five senses, when truly we have, 13 senses or more, some of us. we truly are worthy of that guidance, and there's always that help when we ask. And when you're just first starting to listen to it, it's usually the smallest little voice. And over time, you kind of train yourself to just trust it. When you have the faith and you put those your feet out, then the ground somehow is just always there. And you can start to rely on source, and then your third eye opens and your pineal gland starts to really activate, and you can start using telepathy with people around you. You'll start to notice coincidences. I just wanted to share that. I do thank you for your time, and Lavendar and Ariel for doing everything that you do. You're a wonderful connection point for those of us who are here and aware of what is going on. Also, wanted to just mention really quickly that the BBC News, there's just an update on the BBC News. I don't have the link, but I'm going to post it on my profile on the Starseed Hotline, that they have reported a UFO that was approached by two military air vessels from humans and was not approachable, and it is on its way over here to North America for first contact. Whether that happens ASAP or what is going on with it, it was reported by the BBC, so it is pretty major and really positive, of course. So.
Great.
Good.
Great.
Thank
well,
you
thank
so
you.
Much. Yes.
Thank you for telling us that. We'll look for that post and pass it on.
Thank
you so much
you.
For calling in, Estrella. It's
thank
always
you.
A pleasure to hear from you.
Thank you. Blessings.
Thank you. We have a question. I think we have Sierra in the chat room. You have a question from the chat room, Sierra?
Actually, I don't have a question from the chat room. I just wanted to, if I could, touch on the crack between the world. I actually, is that okay, Lavendar?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay. I was in the Grand Canyon when you all aired that, and I had a chance to listen to that today in preparation for our show today, and I was so deeply moved. There were so many things that actually happened for me while I was listening to that. You know, the listeners that day had called in with missing time, to being moved, to tears. I had the full gamut of everything happening for me also. And one of the things I wanted to say is thank you, Lavendar, for having the courage and being willing to go ahead and bring that information forward right now in this time. It's very important. And
thank you. Well, you're part of this, and I know it.
Yes, and I sent you a long email. Well, that's not too long, but describing some of the things that happened for me while I was listening to that show. And one of the experiences that I had was sort of like a shift, because I had an experience to walk in myself. It was like that walk in my walk in that I had stepped aside. And something else came in while I was listening to that show, and I talked to Ariel for just a second before the show, and it shook me up pretty badly. I had flashbacks and memories of things that you've done in your life as if I was watching the whole time. And so sometime you and I can talk a little bit more about that, but it's still got me shaken pretty good. And Ariel told me to go eat chocolate, and I did.
When all else fails, just go eat chocolate.
I wouldn't eat chocolate, but there is more work to be done, and I'm just very grateful to be here, and I'm very grateful that I've had the experiences that I've had, and that I'm actually here where I said I was going to be and a part of what's happening here, because it's very, very important for people in our time and what's happening here on the planet and galactically, so... Again, thank
good.
You, and thank you for letting me share just a little bit of what's happened. But it's altered me dramatically again, so here we go.
Right.
Here we go.
Just hang in there for the ride.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Things are accelerating, and I thank you for sharing that, because other people who may have listened to last week's show, Crack Between the Worlds, and had some reaction as you did, let them know that they're not alone, that this is what the story is doing, and it's just a clue that you're part of something that is maybe more than anybody knows right now, and it will unfold.
Absolutely.
We so much appreciate all that you do with us, and thank you so much for co-hosting in the chat room. I can't see the chat room, so do we have people there?
We do, and we've got a couple of chat room people in the queue now saying that they'd love to talk to you, so yes, we do have people then.
Okay, people in the chat room, if you have a question, if you would just type it in so Sierra can see it, and then she will forward your question to Lavendar. If you can't call in, if you can, the number is 917-889-8292, and then you have to press 1 so we know you have something to say. Okay, Sierra, I'll check back with you in a few minutes to see if we have any questions coming from the chat room.
Perfect.
And thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye. We have a lot of callers on the line. If you have a question or comment, though, you have to press 1 so we know that you're not just listening. While we're waiting for more questions, Lavendar, do you have any kind of comments that you'd like to make, either about Crack Between the Worlds or the Chapter 1, The Seedling?
Well, I had already, thanked everyone for their emails, and of course, I'm just, daily understanding more and more about the responsibility level of releasing this story. And I seem to be gaining more courage about, reaching deeper into the bank vault.
Well, didn't you tell me that you've had some, you might want to define, because you use this term quite a bit, and maybe people don't know what you're talking about, what does high strangeness mean when you use that phrase?
Well, it's where, something will happen, and it's so out of the norm of physics or reality as we know it. It's like my cat leaping across the lawn 3 times in a port. That's high strangeness. Okay.
Okay, that's what I was leading to. For those that hadn't heard this yet, since you released the story, you've noticed some unusual things coming into your life.
Yeah, I'm witnessing, some more things, around.
So you saw your old, your senior cat across the street, and as she started coming towards you, she dematerialized and then rematerialized in the middle of the street, and then did that again 2 more times to get her to your door.
Right.
That's what we call high strangeness, boys and girls. You see it with your eyes, and there's no way that your earth logic can explain it away.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you found another little kitty.
Yeah, I have another little kitty. I named her Georgia.
She just showed up, and you named her Georgia after George Van Tassel.
Well, she's
a girl.
Yeah, right.
Only she's a girl.
Girl.
So she has to be Georgia. Okay, if we have any more people that want to ask a question or make a comment, please press 1 so we know that you're waiting. We do have someone from the 303 area, 303-786. You're on the air. Do you have a question for Lavendar?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. Well, I have never met either of you, but I'm really so excited about this show. It's helping me so much. My name is Tina, and I live in Colorado. And I just wanted to say I listened to all these things today about what happened to you, Lavendar, when you were growing up, and I'm sure you're going to start hearing this, but so many of the very similar things happened for me, and not in Oklahoma, but I was really sick. I had a lot of discrimination. I also was told I couldn't have children, but not by a voice from within me. It was, you know, the doctors told me that. And, you know, it's very interesting to hear all these characteristics that you've had. And I'm sure many people are going to tell you that a lot of those things were true for them as well. But I just wanted to say thank you so much for all this information. It's just opening up a whole new way for me to see what's going on. And I really appreciate it. I really need this right now. So thanks.
Okay, you're welcome, Tina.
You're so welcome, Tina. And I might add that it really helps when people say, this it's the same for me, or I know what you're talking about, or something similar happened, because it's very important, because one of the common starseed traits is that you feel isolated and alone. So between the show and our website and our support forum, this is a place where starseed can meet their own kind and, you know, develop relationships with people who really understand and know that you're just not alone, certainly not on this planet, and certainly from the ETs in orbit and in other locations, you're not alone.
And I'd like to say that throughout the years, I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of women that had very similar circumstances with their conception and their birth. It was very, very heartwarming for me to know that I wasn't the only one. I'd really come in contact with a lot of women that have similar stories like mine. And, of course, later on in the later chapters, I will talk about the galactic babies, and I will talk about the vanishing twin syndrome. I'll talk about that. And, yes, it's just been, it's very illuminating to know that you're not alone with this, that others are like you.
Yeah, and one other thing that really came to mind that was so oddly similar is you were talking about how you noticed how many things would be in jars and things like that. And when I grew up, I swam a lot, and I looked at the bottom of the pool for hours. But one of the things that I learned was about the passage of time, because I was training as a swimmer, and I was always, you know, watching the clock and seeing the intervals and the, you know, I really was trained to understand about numbers and time because of that. You talk about the numbers of things in jars, and I don't know, it was very odd.
Well, it's a part of our brain, you know, that says you need to remember this. You know.
Yeah. Or you need to learn this, learn how to do this, and you have no idea that looking at the numbers as a swimmer was going to be training you for some other kind of pattern recognition. It's just an early exercise.
It's a navigation tool.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, it's navigating your life.
Tina, can I ask you, have you listened to other shows in the archives?
I have listened to every one of them.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's great.
Yep. At first, I couldn't hear the one from Saturday because it just kept saying buffering, but I've just listened to the recordings of them because it's been difficult to get on live, but Lavendar asked me to get on live today, so I really made the effort. So here I am, and it's great to be able to converse.
Good. Has anyone else had trouble hearing the Saturday show? I had a couple of emails saying that they tried to get on, and it kept saying buffering. So
I finally figured it out somehow.
Yeah, okay. Okay, good.
I'll check into it. I don't know that there's anything I can do about it. But Saturday was a rebroadcast of Tuesday. The only thing that would be different would be the callers at the end because we had live call-in.
There were several differences in Lavender's presentation, I noticed.
We had a little bit of chat before she started, but the actual story was pre-recorded, so that'll be the same file on both shows. So if you have trouble with anybody, you have trouble with Saturday, just go listen to Tuesday, Crack Between the Worlds, and there'll just be the live questions at the end that you wouldn't be able to hear on Saturday. So, well, thank you so much, Tina, and I would like to ask others to do the same that you have done in catching up, because we are laying this information in a specific order. So if you're listening for the first time, try to make the time to go back and pick up on the chapters that you have missed, because it will make everything else make more sense when you come back next week. Thank you so much for calling in, Tina. I'm going to check back with Sierra right now, and we look forward to talking to you again. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Hello, Sierra. Do we have any questions from the chat room? Hello, Sierra. Okay, well, that seems to be hung up. I'll check back later. Anybody else with a comment or question for Lavendar, just press 1 on your keypad so we know you have something to say. Oh, it looks like Sierra's called back in. Okay. All right, we're having a little issue here with the button. There we go. Hi, Sierra.
Hi.
Can you hear me this time?
Wow, that was fun. Okay. I do not have a question at this time, but I do. I thought that a couple people were in the queue, so I ask a couple people that said they hit the number 1 button in the talk in the chat room twice. You're going to have to hit it again to get back in to waiting, and so that you can say what you had to say. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, because once
they said they hit it a couple of times just to be sure, and I think they might have actually taken themselves off.
Okay. Well, let me go back down through and see if I can. Oh, yeah, I do see some new numbers now. Okay, thanks,
perfect.
Sierra.
Okay. Sure.
Okay, from the 706 area, you're on the air. You have a question for
me? Hey, it's Nick again. How you doing?
Hello,
hey, Nick.
I just want to share with Lavendar that it was interesting when she was talking about her early life. If I would have ever been in a situation with you and you told me that you couldn't have any Earth children, I'd have said, wow, this is the gal I need to be with. Seriously. So, yeah, I guess it all depends on who you were talking to.
That's priceless. That's the first time I've ever heard anyone make a comment about that. That's cute. I like that.
Well, I thought it was interesting, you know, because I've always been a seeker my whole life, and especially the metaphysical, spiritual, and, you know, ETs and all that kind of stuff, and so that would have absolutely fascinated me. So,
I would say you always stood out among the crowd.
Yeah, I was different for sure. I always characterized myself as not your average patent attorney. That's for sure.
Right.
But anyway, I really enjoyed these last two shows, and look forward so much to hearing more of what you were able to bring forth now, because this is a time of big change, and I'm sensing it, and there's a whole lot of people, I think, that are getting ready to get on board with us, so it'll be fun.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Remember when we had that little trip out in the desert
back in Nevada and Utah?
Yeah.
Well, what, that was really something.
Well, I still don't know exactly what you guys did. It was you and Norma Tarango, and I can remember sitting out there, and you guys did some type of feminine initiation on me. But it really, it was part of my process, and I'm actually doing an autobiography of all my spiritual experiences, and that's right in there with the rest of them. And
thank you.
It's been quite a journey, so, and it's not over.
It's not over. I know.
No.
Well, thank you for calling. It's giving me a great smile on my face today.
Well, that's great.
We're going to write this one down. Okay, Nick. Thank you so much for calling.
Oh, bye-bye. Sure. Thank you so much. And I look forward to more of these.
You got it. Every Tuesday.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, we are broadcasting now on Tuesdays at 7 Eastern time. So do the math to find out your time zone from 7 Eastern time. We'll be on every Tuesday. And we have another caller with a question from the 928 area, 282.
Hi, this is Ann from Sedona. I couldn't let you go without calling in and telling you how much I've enjoyed hearing about your growing up time, and especially through the 50s. I relived the 50s with you and all those wonderful TV programs and the music from the 50s. It was just a very special time.
Yes, it was.
And I'm particularly interested in Australia's announcement that came over the BBC about the UFO that's heading this way for first contact. I'm looking on the website, and I can't see where she's going to post that. Can you tell me?
Well, possibly she hasn't done it yet, but it would be on our Starseed support forum, which is starseedhotline.ning.com. And I would just say, you know, check back frequently.
Okay.
To give her some time to post, because when you do post something on that, it would probably be in the forum. And
is that the regular Starseed Hotline forum, discussion forum?
It's the discussion forum. So our main website with the library, the vault of knowledge, and all that's just starseedhotline.com.
Right.
And the forum is starseedhotline.ning, N-I-N-G.
Okay.
So that would be where you can join for free and share information, read information from others, ask questions, make new friends. We even have a marketplace if anyone has something that they'd like to sell that's kind of physically related. So
I loved your comment about when all else fails, eat chocolate, because that's what I do all the time. I loved it. And so I thought, well, there really is a reason for me eating all this chocolate.
Right. Yeah, well, you just got to have some on hand.
Yeah.
Well, Anne, thank you so much for calling in, and I do think that Sierra in the chat room wants to make contact with you, so just put that little bug in your ear. We only have about a minute left, so
okay.
Say goodbye for now, and we will talk to you again soon. Thanks for calling. Well, Lavendar, we only have a minute left. If you would like to give us some ideas about what may be coming out of the vault for next week, or is that top secret?
Well, I'm going to be continuing on my story about Jim and what happened, when I freaked out about February 12th of 69 and had that written on the windshield, and I went to Las Vegas. So we're going to start with what happened to me when I got to Las Vegas.
Okay.
That's where I will start. And and I'll go into, you know, great detail about, you know, seeing Eddie Fisher and Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton and my encounters with.
We have just 15 seconds left, so I want to say thank you to everybody who called in. Thank you in the chat room. Thank you, Sierra. Lavendar, as always, thank you, and we will see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.